Title: Resonate or Isolate, by Rajan Devadasan. As Christians, we can still resonate with others even during a time of isolation. I love the Simon and Garfunkel song I Am a Rock. This is its second stanza. I've built walls, a fortress deep and mighty, that none may penetrate. I have no need of friendship, friendship causes pain. Its laughter and its loving I disdain. I am a rock. I am an island. I urge you to listen to that legendary duo sing the whole song. Please click on the YouTube link provided in this article to listen to the song. As poetic as their lyrics are, though, Sang's forthright message is depressing and, I believe, the polar opposite of what each of us needs to focus on in this season of disease-driven desolation riddled with demoralizing detachment. All of us, Christian or not, need other people. God created us to be in a community and to integrate and interact with one another. Throughout history, there have been some who chose to ignore this fundamental truth. For millennia, there have been hermits who isolated themselves from the rest of humanity to avoid being tainted by the masses. While we all need time apart from large crowds to calm our hearts and minds, to listen to our internal rhythms, and to commune with our Creator, by and large, our calling is to live in communities God meant for us to be a part of, not apart from. Jesus illustrated this truth by choosing to spend significant chunks of time interacting with small groups like his disciples at the Garden of Gethsemane and with large crowds at the Sermon on the Mount. Because Christians are called to be light and salt to a dying world in need of the salvation message we bring, it's crucial we figure out how best to live in this imperfect world to communicate the gospel of our perfect Messiah. I suggest we rely on biblical principles. In Stephen Covey's book Principle-Centered Leadership, he explains that principles operate in obedience to natural laws. He writes, "Principles are not invented by us or by society, they are the laws of the universe that pertain to human relationships and human organizations. They are part of the human condition, consciousness, and conscience. I believe the miraculous weaving of true North principles into the fabric of our universe is God's handiwork. So too, is the embedding of guiding principles within His Bible. Here are five that I think are relevant to us all. Principle 1, true wealth comes from God. Principle 2, God uses our patience and hard work as conduits for the wealth He wishes to give us. Principle 3, wealth itself is neutral, it is neither good nor bad, merely a magnifier of human character. Principle 4, God has clear expectations of what we should first do with our wealth. Principle 5, while it is useful here, monetary wealth is useless in heaven. Each of those principles can serve us in the specific marketplace we choose to operate in. Think about each one, perhaps by rewriting them all in a notebook you carry around so you may refer to them daily. As you do so, remember the Bible teaches us that God grants us wealth and much more. Proverbs 22:4 says, "Humility and the fear of the Lord bring wealth and honor in life." Common sense tells us patience and hard work are basic requirements for creating and accumulating wealth. The famous law of the harvest - we shall reap what we sow, reaffirms that truth. But there are other more direct biblical affirmations of this fundamental principle. For instance, Proverbs 10:4b states, "Diligent hands bring wealth." Since God is the source of all wealth, it is natural that He has something to say about its use. Consider this command blessing couplet in Proverbs 3:9-10. "Honor the Lord with your wealth, with the first fruits of all your crops, then your barns will be filled to overflowing, and your vats with new wine." And yet, for all its usefulness here on earth, money has zero value in heaven, a truth lost on ancient Egypt's misguided pharaohs who insisted on being entombed in pyramids stuffed with gold. James 5:3c states, "You have hoarded wealth in the last days." The inference is clear, selfish hoarding isn't going to help launch anyone upstairs. Instead of hoarding excessive wealth for ourselves, being generous to missions-focused causes and sound charities allows us to leave a tangible legacy of love and good works. If we're going to incorporate all five listed principles into our lives, maintaining a balance between them is vital. We mustn't be so preoccupied with money that we lose sight of the one who gives it to us because He cherishes us. Similarly, we shouldn't squander the resources God showers upon us. God requires Christians to tithe and give generously, not because He needs our money but because we have been hardwired with the inclination to help others who form part of our community. Each person we choose to show love to becomes our neighbor, as Jesus taught us in the parable of the Good Samaritan. Giving is a laudable, natural part of our human condition. Just as we would be in trouble if we breathed in air but never exhaled, or ate without completing natural excretions, we can't take in money without giving some away, not if we wish to remain healthy. After the tithing, missions, and charitable giving are carried out with a cheerful heart, other biblical principles and plain common sense suggest some of our money should be saved and invested, Some should be given to the less fortunate as charitable contributions, and some should be spent on ourselves and our families. In each area of focus after our top priority of tithing, saving and investing, giving to others, and spending on ourselves, wisdom should be exercised. Relative optimal levels of saving and investing, giving, and spending will differ from person to person. As an overarching guide, I advise Christians to follow a four-tiered cash flow allocation model. Tier 1, tithe, 10%. Tier 2, save and invest, 1% to 50%. Tier 3, give, 1% to 88%. Tier 4, live on what is left, 1% to 88%. As your tier 1 to 4 percentages must add up to 100%, you'll need to adjust your ratios to ensure the tier 2 to 4 percentages total 90%. Working first from a written budget and later analyzing your cash inflow and outflow numbers on an Excel spreadsheet will be illuminating. You'll discover your ratios reflect your actual priorities in life because they show you precisely how you spend your money. There is no room for self-delusion when your numbers stare back at you. Then you can decide on the revised allocation ratios you aspire to reach in 10, 20, or 30 years. Your goal is to select future ratios that help you resonate with others as you grow into your role of caring, connected contributor. About Rajan Devadasan. Rajan Devadasan, CFP, is a licensed financial planner, professional speaker, and author. Read his free articles at www.freecoolarticles.com. He may be connected with on LinkedIn at https://www.linkedin.com/in/Rajan Devadasan, or via rajan@rajandevadasan.com. You may also follow him on Twitter @RajanDevadasan and on Clubhouse. The end.